We looked in detail at MRI, magnetic resonance imaging, last week. And this week, I want to look at another method of mapping the brain. Functional magnetic resonance imaging, or fMRI. As you can imagine, there are a number of similarities between this technology and MRI, but this one specifically measures brain activity by detecting associated changes in blood flow. It relies on the blood-oxygen level-dependent contrast, a relationship discovered by Seiji Ogawa, which states that cerebral blood flow increases when an area of the brain is in use. This technology can be used to scan and map neural activities in the brain or spinal cord of humans, and indeed other animals too, by creating an image of changes in blood flow and comparing it to energy used by brain cells. And it's come to the fore as a technique because patients don't need to have shots or ingest drugs, much less have surgery or even be exposed to radiation. So clearly, there are obvious similarities with MRI. For starters, they both use strong magnetic fields. But the difference is that where MRI gets its data by detecting radio signals sent out from hydrogen atoms inside the body, the fMRI technology measures the change in magnetization between the areas of oxygen-rich blood and oxygen-poor blood. Now, it's true that noise does corrupt this, and that might be noise from the patient, the doctor, or any ambient sound, really. But that's not a limitation. The technology includes statistical analysis that can overcome this. fMRI is not as heavily used as its counterpart, though, and I must say MRI is, well, it's widely used these days in medical diagnosis, the staging of disease, and for the follow-up and so on. fMRI is not used so much in clinical settings. In research, however, it has really come to the fore. But in medicine, there are a few drawbacks. The problem is that when we conduct medical trials, we tend to choose subjects that are healthy volunteers, ones that are standard and not too deviant from the norm. And research also takes place under controlled conditions. But the real world isn't like that. And patients in medical settings, the kind you ultimately want to map, aren't like that either. They have tumors and lesions that change the blood flow in unpredictable ways. And drugs do too. Common drugs like antihistamines and even caffeine, they also affect the results. So that's not especially useful, but not completely pointless either, as there have been useful, well, uses of this technique in investigating or mapping the brain after a seizure or after a stroke, even detecting the onset of Alzheimer's, or learning about depression, and it helps doctors understand which parts of the brain are heavily in use should they have to remove any brain tissue. Now, there are commercial uses too, principally in lie detection. One of these companies, No Lie MRI, charges you about $5,000 for its services. So, if any one of you suspect anyone of, well, cheating on you, that might be the place to go, and that's how much it will cost. Rather a lot, if you ask me. No Lie bases its services on the assumption that certain parts of the brain are more active when you're lying, evidence that resulted from a study done by researchers at Harvard University. But, as with a lot of academic research, there is also some controversy over whether this theory is correct. And from a legal perspective, the evidence from the No Lie company isn't strong enough to hold up in court. That is because of the reasons I've already mentioned. Clinical testing is just not real life. Real life is much more complex. So, as far as the company No Lie is concerned, you're really throwing your money away. And there's also an ethical aspect to the issue as well, and that's the question of whether it's moral to delve into someone's mind and interpret their thoughts.